I'm working from home for this week. We're trying to stagger our staff so that we don't, if there is a risk of any of us getting infected, that we'll have a team that'll be able to step in. So I've been virtually consulting all week.
So everything online, Marla, over the phone, email and
over
so
the
forth?
Phone, yeah, everything. And we have a system where we can send prescriptions directly to the pharmacy. It's great. You know, it's funny. Necessity is the mother of invention, as they say, and there's an awful lot of work being done. And we have these video conferences, and we're kind of being kept up to date with everything in all these changing times. And it's working. I think people are very... I am so sorry.
Don't worry. Don't worry.
That's close to Bowie. I was just going to say that it's a very difficult time, but people are getting a little anxious about things. They're getting anxious when they're hearing about ventilators and PPE equipment and stuff. But really, I think I'd love to reassure people that you shouldn't get anxious. Do your own bit. Your own bit is the most important thing, which is to self-isolate, keep your distance. This can't spread if people don't mix, because the virus can only multiply and spread on people. So if we don't expose ourselves to that risk, it will not spread and we'll stop this.
So the secret is not expose ourselves to others and not be exposed to others, because it works both ways, and none of us knows who has had it. Some of us might have gone through it not knowing the difference. It might have been just something that was in the system and went. Is that fair to say, Maura?
Absolutely. This is what I've been trying to tell people, that you should assume at any stage that you have it and the person that you're talking to has it. And that's not to be paranoid. You know, there's a healthy paranoia about this. That's just to be sensible, because we don't know. Some people have very mild symptoms, as you said. Some people have don't show many symptoms at all, but they can still spread the virus. So just assume that you could have this at any stage, and that means... If you knew that you had this virus, wouldn't you do everything in your power not to give it to somebody else?
So, absolutely.
So that's how we should really all act at the moment.
It's difficult, of course, because we've seen the figures jump and spike yesterday in particular. Yeah. In the early days when all of this was kicking off, and I know you were on with Gavin, and I think you were one of the last people to commit to this studio on the day, and I think you videoed it as well. And at that stage, you know, we were all worried, we were all concerned, but not many people were actually heeding the advice and socially isolating and, you know, keeping their distance. And that could be coming back to bite us on the ass now, could it?
Well, it could be, because there is a delay. There's a time lag with this between, you know, when somebody could have been infected and presentation of symptoms. I do think, though, since the weekend, people have been extraordinarily good. You know, you can understand Sunday and the people going out for walks, and everybody tried to go to somewhere they thought might be quiet and deserted, but everybody went to the same places. I don't think anybody intentionally tried to mix, and you know, they weren't trying to break rules. But since then, actually, I think it's been very clear that the people are trying to keep their distance. But you know, so there's a fear that's stimulating that behaviour, and that fear in some ways is a little bit healthy, but it's also, we need to be very careful about the people who are vulnerable from a mental health point of view. You know, these people as well, you know, all of us stress and are anxious, but some people will suffer more. And I think we have to keep our kind of phone lines open, and we need to be able to kind of talk to people and try and reassure them that if we all do our bit, this will pass, and they don't have to be overly concerned.
Okay, now let's go back to the start once again, Maura, if we can. Just remind us of, and of course, this is evolving. We're learning more about this, I think, every single day from other countries.
Yeah, this is the whole thing. It's a new virus.
Absolutely,
you know?
And learning more about it here. And the criteria have changed. In the early days, what would the criteria have been for a GP to refer somebody for testing, or for someone to ring a GP and express concern? What were the symptoms we were concerned about at the start?
Well, it actually has changed several times. In the beginning, and this is causing a lot of concern for us in the very beginning, we couldn't refer at all. GPs were not the position that we... what was happening is people who had direct contact with a known case or who had travelled from abroad were the only people who had been tested. Then that was widened, which was great, because it meant that we could really look for community acquired infection. It was broadened too much, however, and that was because we were following WHO guidelines, which was to test, mm-hmm. and identify cases. However, recently the criteria has changed again, and that's because the number of positive tests, thankfully, were quite low, but it showed that the broad testing criteria was actually maybe using up resources that could work better to be used in other areas. So now the criteria has changed again, and you need to be symptomatic. And before, if you had any kind of respiratory symptom, cough without a temperature, slight shortness of breath, even a sore throat, we would have been able to put you forward for a test. Now you need to have a temperature above 68, a cough or shortness of breath. And then there's other criteria then, as you read them out earlier about, you know, healthcare worker, people in vulnerable groups. That would mean history of cardiovascular disease or respiratory disease, serious respiratory disease. Now, not like mild asthma, you know, mm-hmm. Chronic renal failure, chronic liver disease, things like that. They would be the people, and over a certain age, frailty, which is kind of a concept people might be familiar with, but frailty would be a vulnerability too. So somebody who's old and not a very good eater, frail, as you can imagine.
Yes.
So that would be another vulnerable group. So the criteria have changed, but that people shouldn't get alarmed by this, because this is how health organisations deal with changing situations. Now they have changed the criteria, and the emphasis is on, if you're symptomatic, you assume you have the virus, don't worry about a test, but you self-isolate. You know, and what I want to get across to people as well is that, for a long time we were putting a lot of emphasis on the test. Now I want people to be very careful about their symptoms. If they have flu-like symptoms, so be it. You know, that's viral, it'll mm-hmm. pass. If they have problems with their breathing, that's a different thing. And what we know is that this we don't know if it was for certain, obviously, because it is a new virus, but the trajectory seems to be that people present with the cough, maybe a little bit of shortness of breath, temperature, flu-like symptoms, and by day 5 or 6, they either are improving or they take a dip. And at that stage, shortness of breath can be a real issue. And if that mm-hmm. happens, we need to assess them again, and we need to assess them to see whether or not they need to be hospitalised.
Okay, this is something that will hit you very gradually. It will not hit you all of a sudden. It will hit you gradually. Is that fair to say?
No, it seems like flu symptoms tend to hit you all of a sudden in a lot of cases. But you will be dealing with that, but then this deterioration in your symptoms where you may actually need to go to hospital and get some supportive treatment like oxygen or, God forbid, a ventilator. That happens. Mm-hmm. After maybe about a week. And hopefully, like we say, 80% of people have very mild symptoms. You know, so that's what you need to remember. There's very few that end up in that scenario. However, if they do, as we can see, the death rate did kind of rise very quickly last night, unfortunately. So people need to be aware of that. But what they need to do is do their bit. You need to do your own bit and look after yourself. People have personal responsibility, and people also have responsibility for the wider community.
Also, more in relation to the people who had been sent forward for testing, there was talks of 40,000 people waiting for testing. Many of those will not be going for testing now, but they shouldn't worry. It's because the criteria has been changed, because where the medical professionals are learning more about this every day, they realise that maybe you don't need a test at this time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I mean. So resources need to be put where they're best used. So yes, it did cause a lot of concern. A couple of days ago, GP practices were absolutely crazy because people had been put forward for tests and then they were ringing to see whether they would need a test. Now, really, you need to use your own common sense with that as well. You can see all this criteria is up on websites. But don't worry about the test. The test isn't the most important thing. The symptoms are the important thing, and the isolation is the important thing. And if you are deteriorating in any way, you call your doctor. So that's the message I want to get out there, that, the test, it confirmed cases, and it was useful for contact tracing. But when you get to a certain level in the community, the contact tracing is not as important because, like I say, you need to assume you have it and everybody else has it.
Yes. Okay. Now, just in relation to the number of cases in Clare that doubled overnight to 25, is that a huge concern, or is this part of the trend? Is this how it's going to be?
I think that's part of the trend, and actually maybe Clare has, the figures aren't very high. It seems to be the figures are higher in urban areas. It's hard to know, but what I'd be afraid of when, you know, one of the things that has been quite controversial all along is people not knowing where clusters were, and I think that is the right thing. I don't think people should know because it makes you complacent. If you hear that there's huge numbers in Dublin, but I think for a while there was none in Monaghan. You know, people, yes, in Monaghan then would actually be, I'm not suggesting they were, but you could be very complacent about it. So knowing where the cases are is probably, it's a matter of curiosity rather than of any benefit from a health point of view.
Do you think, Maura, that we could or should expect big rises from now on in County Clare?
I think we probably will. I think the next 2 weeks are going to show us a lot. And as you said, that's probably a throwback to the fact that we weren't as careful up until last weekend. But it's hard to say, and let's hope that we'll do well. And from now, let's, you know, if there is a big rise in the next 2 weeks, so be it. That's historical, if anything. From now on, people have to do their bit. This is difficult, but personal discomfort is really very low on the list of priorities right now.
I know that you don't have a crystal ball, but end in sight, do you reckon? You're at the front line, the cold face of it. You see it from that perspective and have a better insight than most of us. Any idea when it might peak and start to fizzle out?
You would hope that coming into real summer, things would have settled down. But I do, and I said this actually weeks ago, that this is our new normal because this virus is here. And, you know, until we all have a vaccine for it to protect ourselves from it, it is going to continue to circulate. So life possibly has changed permanently in one sense. But we just adapt. That's what people do. And Irish people are particularly good at that. But yes, I hope the peak will be over in a matter of weeks. But like you say, I don't have a crystal ball.
Of course. Now, that text I mentioned earlier, this is a message for Dr. Maura Finn. I have motor neuron disease and my query is whether I should go for the COVID-19 test. I have no symptoms, but I am concerned. And that's from Eileen.
Okay, Eileen. And Eileen has significant issues to deal with. But actually, without any symptoms, she doesn't meet the criteria. So, and like I say, it isn't really of any great benefit to her to have the test. She should, like we all do, assume that she could be exposed to it and that anybody else who she's in contact with could have it. So she needs to just protect herself by the social isolation and distancing and the hand washing and all the things we've been saying all along. This virus can't get into your system if it can't get into your respiratory system. That's your nose, your mouth, your eyes. Mm-hmm. So if you touch your face after you've touched somebody, something that had the virus on it, or somebody has directly exposed you to droplet spread, they're the only ways this can happen. So for Eileen and for all of us, she just needs to be distant from people and wash her hands, don't touch her face. We've been saying this now for weeks and it sounds almost like a broken record at this stage, but you
it's
know,
critical.
People,
yes.
It is critical. It's the most important thing. And sometimes people are getting a little bit distracted by other issues and people are becoming anxious about, you know, hospital equipment, and that's not what you need to think about. That's not what Eileen or anybody else needs to think about. What everybody in the community needs to think about is protecting yourself and protecting the people around you and washing your hands, not touching your face. They're the two critical things.
Of course, Eileen's text, and thank you very much, Eileen. It raises the question, you've answered it already pretty much, Maura, that you don't request a test. You'll be sent for a test if you meet the criteria. You can't have the test just because you want it.
No. I mean, that, you know, I'm sure people understand that.
Yes.
I hope they do. It's difficult to say. There are people, unfortunately, who behave badly at times like this, but most people realise that this is... you know, it's international, it's a world pandemic, and, you know, nobody is trying to not give them a resource or not do something for them. We're all trying our absolute best. So if, you know, we'll have to follow guidelines and they'll have to follow guidelines too.
I spotted something on the your website as well, Maura. There is actually a COVID symptom test that people can do online.
Yes, there is. There's a kind of questionnaire. that's quite useful. We use it though really for just it's a quick triage, so that it kind of hurries on the consultation that we can do with the patient then. And I'm not suggesting that everybody does that, because really that can cause a certain amount of anxiety too. Mm-hmm. You know, and like I say, I what I really want to get across is that everybody should assume they may have this virus. So, you know, if you do that test and you think, oh, no, sure, I'm grand, then you might behave the way we need.
Yes. That's so, the other side of it, of course, as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Dr. Maura Finn, live long and prosper. And wash your wash your hands.
Wash your hands, don't touch your face.
I give the doctor advice.
thank you. And listen, to everybody out there, please relax, do what we've asked you to do, and stay safe.